con ayuda de un montón de voluntarios que vinieron hoy de la comunidad de Sámara, de las comunidades cercanas. Incluso hay gente que manejó más de 2 horas para venir hasta aquí hoy. Entonces, es súper agradable tener esta oportunidad de venir a sembrar estos árboles aquí por medio de diferentes organizaciones, incluyendo la nuestra, la de Costas Verdes, con el programa Bandera Azul de Sámara. Esto es una pequeña actividad de algo que se viene más grande para el año que viene, ojalá, y entrarle más, con más fuerza, con mayor participación en toda Playa Sámara. Entonces, muchas gracias.
Gerardo, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me, Rich.
We haven't sat down in a while.
I know, it's been a while.
I'm glad you're back, buddy.
Me too.
I would argue that Berguiones and the efforts and the things that have happened from you guys over the past years is nothing short of remarkable. And I don't know if everyone in Osara who's here now knows it. I think 5 and 7 years ago, everyone did, because it was small. It was what's going on here? Where did these trees get here? Now we have a lot of new people coming into Osara. It's not just the same Florida, California, a little bit of Canada, a little bit of Europe people. It's now, it's just so different.
I know. Osara is an ever-changing place. It's a fast-growing tourist destination and community. And yeah, like we have to keep up with that. And it's very hard for us to keep up with that rhythm, and the rhythm is getting like faster and faster. So keep reaching out to people. It's a lot of work. So it's a very important challenge we're facing at this time. And but we're trying to do our work. And I know like pretty soon you will start seeing a lot of Costas Verdes reaching out to new people coming in the community.
Well, heck, let's get started with that today, too.
Yeah.
But before we get to the stuff that you have going on now, some people might not know what's up. Can you go ahead and retell the story and share with people who might not know what we're talking about?
Absolutely. So before 2011, which is when Berguiones started, the Guiones beachfront and great parts, a lot of the 200 meter part of the refuge was in really poor shape. So like we're talking about like this beach that used to be a cattle farm. So all of its original forest ecosystem was depleted, was fire, like when it was burned. And cattle was introduced along with the cattle, obviously all the cattle grasses and the species that farmers use, not only for the cattle themselves, but to contain the cattle as well. So when the land changed use and was turned into a tourist destination, not long after it was created the refuge. So like we're talking about like 1984, 1985, Oceanal Refuge was created to protect sea turtles, and Guiones was an extension of the refuge a year after the refuge was created, right?
What a godsend that was. Like that between the early people getting the green areas and getting trees to come back from the agriculture, tourism, tell me if this is right. It seems like this is one of the few places on the world tourism actually brought things back.
It is crazy.
Isn't that weird?
Nosara has such a unique history, right? So it went from being a cattle farm into being supposed to be golf residency, tourist and thing.
It's a big country club development on paper.
I know, and like thanks to that, they had all the neighborhoods done, all everything section, all the roads and everything. It was just like a clear path. So when that didn't came through, it was just a clear path for the people who actually came for that, and that didn't came, like they lit up the way to become like to have Nosara become this amazing tourist community.
With nature compared to other places, all off a colossal development country club failure that never happened.
It is crazy that what was supposed to be the golf greens turned into private parklands. And that is incredible for us. And I'm going to tell you why in a few minutes. But also, like, the beachfront, someone told me, like, it was intended to become, like, back then it was supposed to be like a airstrip for airplanes. And then I don't know what happened, but the beachfront, which was clearly devastated, like, it was not in a very healthy shape when it was even like a cattle farm, was left alone to its own restoration, because in the 1980s it became a refuge. So there was this 200 meter setback from the high tide line, right? And then there's all these parklands that were created. Shout out to Nosara Civic Association for doing that amazing job. That's incredible. But that is actually a great example to compare, like, how quick, like, forest and jungle restored in these parklands, and then on the beachfront it didn't. And there was so many, there's a bunch of reforestation efforts and activities done by the NCA and by the neighbors and on the beachfront, and all the trees were dying.
Talk us through that, because you guys were the first time it, like, caught and worked, and then the community got behind it. But again, fill us in on how that happened. How'd you get so much momentum? Why did it work? And then after that, I want you to get us up to speed with what you're doing next. But for right now, tell us why yours work. Because right now, Panama, Nicaragua, all over the place, really the planet, like, people need to learn from this.
Yes.
It's a true example that tourism actually did good, believe it or not, in a world of just tearing everything down. There's some glimmers of hope. And here's an example that people can learn from. And people, again, it's incredible. It's off of a colossal country club failure project coming straight out of agriculture, dedicated to nature reserve, and the people got together to tighten up the other stuff, and here we are today.
Absolutely. It is crazy. I don't know how to connect everything and tell the story so that it has a perfect sense to it, but it just had all these things happening, and it was bringing all these incredible people, some of them conservationists or activists, some of them just wanted to have, like, a place where they could retire, and they would have, like, a lot of jungle around them. So anyway, like, all these, like, parklands were restored by their own, but the beachfront was not, because it was completely devastated from its resources. So the coastal ecosystem was not capable of, or not resilient enough to build up from there and restore its forest. So we're talking about, like, the land change of use, like, since the early 70s when the golf course thing was gonna happen, and it was left to its own process or restoration from there until, like, 2011, which is when Costas Verdes stepped in.
How did you guys get it started?
That's a good one. So Costas Verdes actually started in the Central Pacific in Playa Hermosa. That was 2009. I was already here. And my
That's
buddy...
I met you, 2009, and you were the Harmony at that time.
I was in the Harmony at that time. We know each other. We were surfing already then, like, back then.
We're getting old.
We're getting old, man, yeah. Costas Verdes was being very successful, starting their first project in 2009 in Hermosa, which is in the Central Pacific, and it has a completely different, like, pattern of rains and a different climate than here. It's like more of a rainforest, and here is like a transition where Nosara is located is right, like, on a transition phase in between, like, rainforest and dry forest. So we got a little bit of dry tropical forest influence, like, which is more up north, and then, like, a lot of influence from the rain tropical forest. So we got actually great diversity of trees and plant life in general, because we got the best of the two worlds. But anyway, that was disrupted, and since we had, like, this story in Nosara, our founder Max, after being successful in Hermosa, he wanted to, you know, to expand the horizons and do a different project. And so from Hermosa, he came to Nosara and presented a proposal to do a tree planting campaign to the Nosara Civic Association, and they approved his proposal. They funded this first tree planting campaign, and guess what? It was not very different than the first tree planting activities. This was a great learning experience for Costas Verdes. It was not as easy as Playa Hermosa, but it was challenging and it was motivating, and I was here and I met Max and we became buddies, and I told him like, hey man, like whatever it takes, I'm gonna be here and I'm part of Costas Verdes now, and let's make this happen, man.
This is totally around 12?
This is 2011. This was May, okay. May, June 2011. We had a tree planting campaign on the last week of May, first week of June. We planted 1,500 trees, and very, very few of them survived.
I still have a couple pictures of that.
Yeah.
Like deep in the annals.
Yeah. I remember Surfing Nosara took some pictures during the tree planting campaign. And I was working at the Harmony Hotel then, and I was just like pushing this tree planting campaign for our staff at the hotel, and for our guests. Some of our guests came planting trees, and we had like, you remember Leif Schreiber, I think it's his name, the actor?
I remember some fellow named Leif in it being a...
Yeah. So that's Wolverine's evil brother, right?
And the X-Men. I didn't know that. I had no idea.
Well, that's my favorite, like, he's my favorite movie from him. I don't know many movies of him, but anyway, I saw that movie. And he was in town, and he happened to be at the beach the very last day of our tree planting campaign, where we also had a surf contest. We had a surf contest at Iones Beach, and he was there. Max, our founder, after finished tree planting, he signed up for the surf contest. He was in the surf contest also.
That's awesome.
And he did awesome. He did like two semis or something.
Shut up. Respect.
Yeah. He's a good surfer, man. He planted a tree with us. So that was our first very celebrity planting a tree in Guiones with Costas Verdes. And we have had some celebrities planting trees with us here, as well as in Hermosa and in other projects. But that's how it started. We had a terrible first year with like barely anything survived. That kind of like fired me inside. And so we did a second tree planting campaign next year. Fewer trees, that ones that we were able to raise in our nursery at the Harmony, and then we started changing, you know, little things, like the containers where we were or the bags where we were growing our trees, the species, how big were we growing the trees before being transplanted into the beach, and it was just like this learning curve that went like this. And now, like, the learning curve is, like, becoming more like this. You know how when you learn a new skill in life, how you jump, like, from being, like, a beginner surfer, everything picks up like this, and then, like, things start like,
plateauing.
Yeah. So right now, we're kind of like this. We still need to peak. But yeah, it's been quite an experience, quite a ride. Going through a pandemic, having to reinvent ourselves. It's been quite a ride.
When did you know it was going to work? Because I remember when it started, there was a lot of hope, but there was a lot of uncertainty when that first big planting like didn't connect. And I saw it in your eyes and heard it in your voice. When did it transition from we got to make it work into, all right, it's working? Like, all right. When was that moment?
All right, there's a combination of things that happened. First, El Niño phase. It is extremely difficult it makes things a lot more difficult for tree planting at the beach, because it just brings drought, right? Mm-hmm. It brings a lot of, it takes away the rain.
And at the beginning phases is when they really need to get the irrigation and the
Yeah. So like the very first years, we were carrying like jugs of water, like all the way, like from the hotel or from our first tree nursery, and then like bringing them, like, you know, like all the way to the beach and like going like that. It was crazy, man. But I was trying to have like all my bodies adopt one tree and have them, like, you know,
I remember that
water. Some trees actually survived from that.
I thought it was cool.
That was amazing.
I liked how you connected ownership and a personal like feel to it.
Yeah.
I thought that was really smart.
And I don't know if it was Mario, it was what I had available back then. It was like the only thing I could think of without, you know, like basically no resources we had there. We were all volunteer based, but things actually started changing in 2014 when we did our first proper tree nursery in Nosara Beach Hostel. That's where we were set initially. And so we started picking up seeds from, you know, from local trees around here. We started like putting a lot more effort. I took a lot of volunteers from the hostel and some other volunteers from our community, and we're putting a lot of time into that. And then little by little, we started collecting some donations, and then we were able to hire our first two field workers. And one of them has been with us like for almost 9 years now, Rolando.
Shout out,
thank
Rolando.
Thank you, Rolando. If you ever watch this episode, I hope you know that I appreciate you a lot.
So you figured out
the game changer, hiring two field workers, because the thing is that trees wouldn't survive if you don't give proper, constant, consistent maintenance to them.
That's what I was just about to ask. It sounds like you figured it out when you got your staffing, your attention, and you must have had just enough donations or someone stepped up so that you could work full time. You had a new spot.
And then we started outreaching to small businesses and any kind of business around here. And we started our sponsorship program. So like with our sponsorship program, we were able to raise consistent funds to keep our, you know, to keep our team operating in Costas Verdes throughout time.
Your levels of that was good too, by the way.
Mm-hmm. We still got it going, and it's been so successful. I want to, you know, give a shout out also to all of our sponsors, because you know, without them we wouldn't have been able like to go through all this time, you know, like since I'm talking about like 9 years. You know, already, like the thing, when we first started our sponsorship program, it was like in our minds, it was, we need to get like a consistent source of funding to be able to pay our employees, right? Mm-hmm. So we set up that, but then we came to realize that, wait a minute. So we do all this call out to volunteers during our tree planting campaigns, and many businesses are supporting us, like, or, you know, are cheering us, but they say they can't make it, that they can't go to the beach with their employees and plant and, you know, like actively put their hands with us because they have a business to attend. It became like this sponsorship program, it became the best way to actually be able to engage with local businesses that can't put their time into planting trees or into going to volunteer at the beach projects or at the nursery.
But you can still be united and pull everyone in together.
Yes. And it came as a great concept that we didn't know back then, but just it just was a, you know, perfect fit, that when a business becomes a sponsor, a local business, and the local part of the sponsorship program is like key, because, you know, like we have this sponsor that is putting money, is betting on us, and is committing that this project that is on his local beach, and it's going to get, and if it does well, it's going to benefit his business indirectly or directly, or both. And if it's successful, I'm going to be a part of this success. I'm going to be successful because my business was playing a part on having, you know, restoring the coastal forest in my beach.
Man, that's a beautiful point. Like geez, that's powerful.
But if, on the other hand, the project fails and my business is sponsoring this project, then that's going to affect me negatively, right? That's going to, you know, it could. I mean, if someone like digs in and, you know, and, you know, ask around or whatever, then it is negative to the business. So it actually is something that puts a lot of pressure on Costas Verdes to, you know, to do things right, to keep on going. We're getting all this funding from all these local businesses. So we have to show up and we have to, you know, there's nowhere to hide.
It's
the public area that everyone goes to have fun and goes watch the sunset and go surf and go walk their dog and go walk on, you know.
You guys can't escape anywhere if you mess up.
We can't. That's the thing. And we would have to shut down Costas Verdes if we have failed at that point.
All right. So Gerardo, again, big thank you to you, everyone. That's an amazing story. But a lot of stuff's happened from when you started to now, even if it's just been 10, 12, 13 years. It's pandemics, global market changes, Nosara being basically a tiny little, you only went there if you knew about it or someone told you about it town. And to now, people are just showing up from everywhere. And also, there's so many other nonprofits. It's always been competitive in Nosara because the same money's getting extracted for now this place to this place to this place. So at some point in this episode, I want you to get to today and also tell us what you're looking for and update me on your struggles. But before we do that, can you help explain like how you went from a trial project that basically was failing until you got your own nursery, things started going, but you were dealing with agricultural land that had been sitting barren, it's all messed up as you described earlier. But if you go to the beach today, those trees are fantastic. They're standing strong. Like it looks, none of your past challenges are visible today. So can you kind of bleed it together in a way so that somebody who's been here for a while can hear it, and also somebody who's brand new can kind of hear the recipe to make this work?
All right. Yeah. So for the first years, we have like this, like, very non-successful rates of survival and the trees growth, and you know, like the beach looked like very similar to how it used to be until like we started like hiring our staff and field workers, and we started our tree nursery, and things like started changing little by little. We started also involving the local school since our very beginning. The thing that really, really changed the game for us was hiring local people and then raising our trees over here. So we were able to start experimenting with local species of trees that were sticking the best in certain areas, or that were growing better when they were being planted more closely together, or they kind of needed to be mixed. So it was really like what really took off or took the project off was like all these things coming up, you know, during the dry seasons, being able to water, and we have been able to water with partnerships also with local hotels, local restaurants, or local people who are basically having their properties bordering the refuge. So they're donating water to us, and we were able like to, you know, to properly water our newly planted trees during their first couple of dry seasons.
Nice. So residents and businesses formed a unifying foundation to help you get and continue to operate. In the meantime, you were learning what grows where and when and figuring out.
Absolutely.
Basically you're like a chef, like a cook.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You have to, you know, learn from mistake. I don't think like there's a degree that can prepare you to deal with these kind of projects, because it's it was not looking easy from the very start. I knew it, and Max knew it. Like we knew it. It was going to take a lot. We were not giving up, and well, things started like some of our trees started doing better and better and better. And the thing is, like, when a tree adapts and survives and starts, you know, taking off, like, it will help other trees that are newly planted over there, and it's going to they're eventually get connected throughout their root system, and that actually like kind of like helps out, like one tree helps the next.
Gotcha. So it's a snowball.
Yeah,
so your momentum begets momentum, and that explains why you guys have had this significant curve.
Absolutely. And at a point we were planting over 5,000 trees in Guiones each year. So we have planted over 33,000 trees in Guiones.
That's incredible.
We have reintroduced 75 native species into the ecosystem, or reinforced the species that the very few species that were there already. The thing is, like, you will have, like, you've seen the pochote tree. The pochote, you know, can be huge, but if you put a pochote on the beach and it's left alone, it will get like a bush, like a bushy spiny plant, and you won't even tell that it's actually a tree until you get like competition. You put some competition and faster growing species, and they like start competing. Then the pochote will be like, oh hey, wait a minute, where's the light going?
I see.
You know, I need to start like growing up.
How many years do you think that this process took to where you guys? Like I said, you really felt it. Like, now we know what to do. We've got it. Like,
yeah. Well, it's still going.
Maybe it never ends.
It never ends. And that I'm very grateful for that, because that keeps me very motivated and very.
What's also
experimental.
This is your purpose for life. Like, this is what you're supposed to
for
do.
For sure, that this gives me a lot of fuel to keep on going and to keep on. You know, keep myself, like I said, inspired, motivated. And you know what I get constantly? Like, I get a lot of, like, friends and local people coming to say, hey, man, have you seen the project? It's so, so amazing. Like, your trees or our trees are taking off and it's now a forest. And I'll be like, yeah, yeah. I wish I would get, like, so excited about that, because, you know, that's my job. And when you get, like, your trees, like, and you go to the beach and you see, like, okay, this grew a little bit more than this other one. So what do I need to make this other one grow a little bit? And then I just have, like, all this critical thinking, and I can't have, like, time to get, like, oh, this is awesome, man.
Oh, man.
You know, like, so I wish you could.
You brought an interesting point there. You do have... I'm trying to put myself in your shoes for a moment. When you sit out in the water and look back, you see heaven and hell. You see new houses, sometimes big houses, popping up all over the place. But then you also see the fruits of your labor, like literally growing in front of you, kind of almost blocking them.
Yeah.
you see what I'm saying?
Like, you know what's a funny thing? Like the surf camp, they had to change it. They had to put it like more up. But that was good. That was good. Like, well, they had to do that because the trees were starting to cover and
this means it's working.
Screen the camera. But since they put it up, now you can see further, and you can actually see like the surf conditions way better.
Have you ever had any complaints from people about the tree plantings? If so, I'd be interested in that.
I don't think it's very worth to mention. We have like some people like, you know, being not supportive.
Well, it seems very hard. I mean, I've been here for a while, and I've been involved or around a lot of the nonprofit stuff, and some are harder than others. Bergione's to me is the most universally accepted, people saying, oh, that's good, yeah, that I can think of out of all of them. Do you feel that way, or is that just me?
No, man, I'm so lucky. I'm like very fortunate, like, that it's been so well adopted and so well, you know, nurtured by the community. And this is very amazing, because this hasn't been the case in some other of our projects. Even Hermosa, we have some of the developments being like you know, underground, paying someone to put on, put fire on their beachfront or on their, you know, for them to have like a clear ocean view. And even though we try to do our diligence and go talk to the landowners or house owners and have them understand, like, you're not gonna lose your ocean view. We're actually enhancing, but you have to see the big picture. Like, all you can see when, well, all you saw when you first built your house was just like this plain ocean view. Like, imagine how that would be with putting some like Scarlett Macaws on top of that, you know, like on top of a canopy, and having your ocean view just be like a lot nicer, you know, with some shade that that you can actually see like a little bit more, how do you say it, with less shine or less brightness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and you know, some people just can't.
Here, I've only heard one.
Open their minds.
In all the years, I've only heard one person say anything, and it was from a homeowner up on Las Huacas. They were mad at us for supporting it being so visible. And he's like, you guys are ruining the place. We're going to lose our views. What are you doing? This is your industry. I like the planet too, but you're not paying attention. And they gave us a pretty good talking too. That's the only one I've heard. And I think your answer was spot on. The view's going to get better. Now you have foliage and animals and a changing tapestry, and some of the plants and trees bloom at this time of year. It adds colors and enhancements.
Well, at some point, like, those house owners in Las Huacas, they're going to be like watching their, you know, their ocean view, having their ocean view with, on top of that, like Scarlett Macaws flying on couples, like, and doing like, you
well,
know,
and also noise. They'll never get fully blocked. How much sand do you need to see?
No, like, it's so stupid.
So anyway, that was the only one I've ever heard, and it was so absurd that I haven't thought about it since, except for if I just wanted to laugh or make a joke or say something smart aleck. But as you're saying that right now, I'd love to know any other things that you hear that you want people to know, like, what's some common misconceptions, or what's the challenging side of this for you?
All right, I'm gonna go back a little bit in our story and actually say, like, well, we're working on public land, which is managed by DAMINAI, the environmental, you know, ministry. This is their, you know, they administer, manage these areas. It is their responsibility. And NGOs oftentimes are born with the idea of complementing a service that the local government or that the government not fulfilling and it should do, you know?
That makes sense.
You know, yeah. And so in our case, we were born to complement MINAI's work, that they're, you know, taking care of the of these refuges, of these national parks, but they created these wildlife or these natural protected areas in order to preserve sea turtle nesting grounds, but the place is not very well suited anymore to hold this nest and to have the best conditions for the nest. So it is obviously not in its best shape. It is not where it's supposed to be. After they create all these areas, they left them to their own restoration, and natural restoration doesn't happen the way it could happen. That our job is fast forwarding the natural restoration process on the coastal forest. Because when you wipe out a coastal forest, like, what you're doing is basically opening up a canvas or a landscape for very competitive, invasive, some of them, a lot of them exotic species to go cover this land very fast. They'll take over, they colonize, and they won't let trees or tree seeds to go in and sprout and then compete and outcompete the vines and the shrubs and the herbs, which is what was happening here. It's still happening. It is more complicated than just seeing like, oh, we got like this like clear canvas, let's just like plant trees and boom, you know, you have a forest. MINAE is the one in charge of doing this, but sadly, like, our government doesn't put or doesn't have or is not efficient enough to put like funding and programs into reforesting these areas, which are very important part for the turtles. You know, the refuge was created for the turtles. The turtles are not having the best conditions, but these areas are not recovering. So that's why Costa Verde was born. We were born to fulfill this service, to complement the you know, our Ministry of Environment in this very specific task. This is a very, very specific thing that we were born to do. We see ourselves as this non-profit organization, grassroots organization, that it came to do a service that complements MINAE. And this is our, you know, one of our most important cornerstones. We have to be of help to MINAE. We have to help them manage the refuge in the way that we can, in whatever we can do. We don't have the authority of, like, I don't know, like, you know, taking someone out of the refuge, but we are working with the MINAE to restore the coastal forest in the refuges. So back to your question, the thing is that there's a lot of people coming into Nosara, and this happens in other places as well, but this is a very, very important case, that are not knowing that this is a wildlife refuge, that they don't know, even less, they don't know that there's turtles coming here to nest. They think that they can come here and do, and not, I'm talking about foreigners, Costa Ricans, even local people, doing a bonfire at the beach where, when it's, you know, not allowed to do that, when there's many illegal things that are backed up with a scientific or a technical reason why a refuge is, but why people are able to do certain stuff, but they're not allowed to do other stuff. And it's all because of, you know, a very important environmental reason for the main part. So we have to keep in mind that we live in this community, that we're extremely fortunate to have these 200 meters of refuge, and everyone going to the beach are gonna look back to Innerland and see no buildings on the beachfront. This is very unique. And Nosara is a growing community, a growing tourist destination that has that uniqueness. How valuable is that? And if we look at that and cherish the fact that we have this unique situation, we have an opportunity to become a very important case of sustainable tourism and sustainable community. It's not only that Nosara is a destination, it is a community, right? There's a very historic community of Nosara. There's like the historic community of expats that came here, and then it's all this dynamic going on. There's a lot of tourists that became part of the community, and this is the dynamic happening over here. Many people don't know that we have a refuge over here and why this refuge was created. So a lot of the work that we're destined to do now, or that we envision doing now in Guiones, as well as in other parts of the refuge, as Pelá, we have also a reforestation project in Pelá. It's a lot newer, it's less than 4 years old. Is to communicate. Is to communicate people to, you know, to passively enforce what the refuge is, you know, set for people or for its users to do or not to do.
Can you tell us what you need today? What are you facing today? Because again, Nosara is way more popular than it ever has been. And there's more competing enterprises to get money. And they come on this podcast, we talk to them. I haven't talked to you in a couple of years. That's weird. I used to see you all the time. But we get old, things happen. It just hit me the other day when I was traveling in Nicaragua. I was thinking about you nonstop. I was like, I got to get here. Here, you got to come up here. And that's, I was reaching out. And then it hit me. I haven't sat down and talked with you about Barry Guioni since before COVID. Like, yeah. So shame on me. It's something that like I'm very much behind and supportive of, but I've been too distant. So I felt bad. I wanted to get you back in here. So tell me and tell whoever's listening, where are you at? What do you need? Because you guys have the love. The results are there. There's no reason why people shouldn't be supporting this outside of someone being like me. I was just being lazy and busy and not paying attention. So put it on me, man.
I really appreciate you reaching out again. It's been, I believe, more than 4 years since we last talked over here. So things have changed a lot. We have gone through a pandemic. We have to reinvent our funding channels, or, you know, maybe, you know, like take someone out and
adjust and survive.
Readjust, yeah. But it is very important for me to state that we are not over with Guiones. So we have set in the vast majority of the project area a canopy. At least on the rainy season, you'll see like you'll go under the shade on the 90% of the time when you're using the trails. And that took a long time. It's still going. Thing is, like, once you do that, it is not that it's just gonna stay like that. Like, if you're like doing a landscape project in your garden, you need to, you know, to give it maintenance, you need to readapt to stuff happening around, and that's just how it works in our project. Like, the thing is, like, it's a very, very large landscape project. Yeah. And
so the ongoing maintenance is something we might not be thinking of because we just see it. And what you're pointing out is, hey, this is still,
absolutely,
this chapter is still unfolding. We have to
absolutely date. Like, there's things going on in our project in Guiones alone that are not happening in any other of our projects, because this is by far our most advanced project regarding restoration. We have
has a lot of eyes on it. It's your what do you call it? Your flag or your like cornerstone? Like, you needed that one to work.
Our case study, we call it.
Okay.
We call it our case study. For example, since we already have like this canopy set, it is compound not by all the species that it should have, because some of them did very great back when the conditions were very, very tough. And they were able to pioneer set the pioneer stage and create this canopy. But later on, we need to start reintroducing other species that are a little bit more vulnerable, fragile. They need like more shade, or they need like a little bit more of organic layer in the soil, or they need like an enhanced or an improved moisture retainment in the soil.
I got you. So Guiones is now this big, but it keeps spinning. I'm sorry I'm interrupting. Just mm-hmm. I want to bounce over to Plot and OCNL too before we run out of camera. So Guiones is a machine that's spinning, but it still needs to be fed. It's just a bigger spin. But then you have OCNL project, then Pilata project, and you want to go beyond. So basically, you've got to get all these spinning everywhere.
Absolutely, man.
So the same amount of money from 2012 must not work in 2022. And as we record this, it's 2023. We've got about 3 minutes of battery left. What do people need to hear?
Nosara has become our case study in the way of that the conditions here were very difficult to face in the beginning, and we have proved that it's possible. And we have done a great deal of work. And like I said, we have planted over 33,000 trees, reintroduced 75 species. We have worked with over 30 schools and over 9,500 volunteers. It is a lot of history, man. And this couldn't have happened with the incredible, extraordinary support of the Nosara community, their businesses, their, you know, local people who are volunteering or putting money, and everything about Nosara was perfect for Costas Verdes to be able to set this case study in Guiones.
All right, so to keep the machine going, though, you need money.
We need funding for sure. Right now we're working on our 5 to 10 year, you know, vision, and it involves a lot more than what people are seeing, and we can get more into this in a little bit, but Costa Verdes is meant for more, and we're aiming for more. And Nosara can be the place where Costas Verdes has position and where it can expand to the sites. And this is what we have been doing in our last years, in Camaronal, in Barrigona, in Pelada. And there's people, so many people calling us, thank God, that there's a lot of other communities wanting to start their own project because they see Guiones as what have they done, like how did they did it, you know? And it's been a long way, but we need to continue doing so, and we need funding for that. And I think Nosara can be the community where Costas Verdes can, you know, start going bigger.
I could not agree more. Again, for the millionth time, thank you. This is your mission, man. Don't let up. No matter what, keep going.
We're not.
Keep going, and you're coming with me one country north, ideally later this year. They need you. A lot of places need you, and I hope that becomes like you're a missionary, man. Maybe you're not going around preaching a particular doctrine, but you are.
Yeah.
That applies to all of us.
It's a different expression of love, man, but it is.
Thanks for coming on, man.
It unites people, man. It's so powerful that I, you know, like for me, I want everyone to experience like what I
get. Just talking about it, man. That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm not gonna go 4 years without seeing you again. I apologize.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank you, all of our sponsors. Like, thank you so much, because without you, you know, the trees that you're enjoying in the beach, and I promise you someday, like not too far away, we're gonna be seeing Scarlett McCausch flying over the beach and Harder Monkeys, you know, throwing some poop at us at the beach.
In addition to that squirrel, it's always throwing his stuff. Thanks again, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you guys.